This is Destiny Pittman at the Residence Inn interviewing Dr. Russell Peterson on 8th of October 2015. So let's start with where you're from. How would you describe?
Well, I guess I'm from originally Thomasville, North Carolina. I was born in High Point, North Carolina. But I lived in Fairmont, North Carolina for 12 years where I went to school.
Okay. How would you describe the area? Was it small town?
All these, Thomasville had when I was born, had a population of 18,000, High Point had a population of about 40,000. Fairmont was 2,000. So all small towns, small cities.
Okay.
Never had a large city experience.
Right. So it was a very close-knit area?
I thought so. Both Thomasville and High Point and Fairmont, the communities were close-knit. We knew everybody in town. And everybody knew you, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... Yeah, both black and white. Everybody knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in all towns, yes.
So, was it a segregated area?
Very much so. In Thomasville, it was segregated. High Point, of course, was segregated. Fairmont was very segregated because in Fairmont there were three. Indigenous populations, white, black, and Native American. And the movie theater was divided into the whites sat downstairs, mm-hmm. and the balcony was divided with a partition down the front. Black people were on one side and Indians were on the other side. Yeah, so it was very segregated at first, mm-hmm. until about early 60s, yeah.
So your area was mostly black, the part you live in?
Yes, in Thomasville, the area was all black,
mm-hmm.
that I lived in. In High Point, it was, that area, Kivett Drive, that was all black. In Fairmont, the area was all black, but by being so small, mm-hmm. The interaction between all the three indigenous groups was more than in Thomasville or High Point,
mm-hmm.
or Greensboro. Yeah. In fact, our best friends in Fairmont were black and Native American.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Alton Hunt was the Indian, and of course E.R. Gauls was a good friend of ours. He was black. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So tell me about your family when you were growing up.
Okay, see. My father grew up in the northern part of Virginia. He had to go to Virginia State University to finish high school because back then, and this, we're talking about 19, late 20s, early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Black people in northern part of Virginia in that county couldn't go to high school, but they had no high school. So he had to go to Virginia State University in Petersburg to finish high school. He left there and went to North Carolina A&T to finish college.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got his master's degree in education from the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. My mother, we just found out, we didn't know that, she finished high school in Winston-Salem,
mm-hmm.
and she went to college at Shaw University, and she got a master's in library science at Atlanta University,
mm-hmm.
and they worked together for all their lives.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents on my mother's father's side were farmers. She never worked. He farmed. On my mother's side, she lost her parents. They were dead by the time she was 17 years old. Mm-hmm. I had first cousins in High Point. That's why, in fact, the lady in High Point, Gwen Peterson, was like a big sister to me because mom and daddy sent her to A&T. Mm-hmm. She finished A&T. In fact, one year she was Miss A&T. And so we had a very close relationship with her in High Point. My mother's family was old, but my mother had an aunt that was like a grandmama to me, and her name was Alice Alford, but we called her Allie. And she died at 94, but mm-hmm. she died at 94 cooking breakfast for the family. And she saved me from many a disciplinary action from my father. Yeah. Most of my family were in education. All my first cousins were, one was principal at education, yeah. Most of them, yeah. So that was the family background.
Okay. Was church a big part of your upbringing?
Yes. Let me see. The saying was, if you can't go to church, you can't do anything else. Daddy was a deacon in the church, and Mama accompanied the choir and everything, yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, church was a big part, both in Thomasville and in Fairmont. Mm-hmm. It was a big part of our lives, yeah. Yeah. In fact, the thing I looked forward to in the summertime was Vacation Bible School. Mm-hmm. And enjoyed it immensely. And of course, Daddy loved church, and of course, Mama loved to play the piano for the choir and everything. Yeah.
What church did you attend?
Let's see, in Thomasville, it was First Baptist Church. Reverend Foster was a pastor. And in Fairmont, it was First Baptist Church, Reverend J.J. Johnson. He became the mayor of Fairmont and mm-hmm. eventually became a assemblyman for the state of North Carolina. Yeah, yeah. Yep, yeah. That's right, yeah.
So let's go more into education, starting with your elementary school.
Well, I went to all of my pre-college education mm-hmm. was at Rosenwald School in Fairmont, North Carolina, which Daddy was the principal. Mm-hmm. And believe me, you learn to get along with people when your dad is principal of school. Mm-hmm. And so I skipped the first grade because they wanted me to skip me to second grade, but Daddy wouldn't allow it because he said I would be too young. But so, because back then, when I started, I went to kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Of course, I was kicked out, but you don't have to tell that. But, I could read by the time I hit first grade, but the kids in that little small farming town, they couldn't do anything. So, and I scored high on the test, so they skipped me to the second grade. Mm-hmm. They wanted to go to third grade, but they said no. So I started off in second grade. So all my pre-college education was done at Rosenwald School in Fairmont, North Carolina. Yeah. From the second grade to the 12th grade, yeah.
And it was an all-black school.
Oh yes, all-black. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. It was all-black. We had, Fairmont had three school systems. Mm-hmm. A black school system, a white school system, and a Native American school system. Mm-hmm. And my sister was in the first graduating class after integration. And when did Janet finish, honey? You remember?
No, I can't remember when she finished.
But anyway, Daddy had retired, but they brought him, they asked him would he come out of retirement to help them integrate the schools. And so right now, Rosenwald, the school that I attended, mm-hmm. is now the elementary school for the city. The Native American school is the primary school, and they built a new high school. Mm-hmm. So everybody goes to the high school. So. In fact, we just got back from Fairmont about, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
About 2 weeks ago, yeah. They honored my father and mother for 42 years of service down there with parade and E.L. Peterson Day and all that.
What was a most influential incident from your pre-college experience?
Influential.
Well, pre-education, pre-college.
I'm trying to think of that was no one incident. What I remember most about coming up, before college was
mm-hmm.
that I had very, very good friends. I mean, very close friends, and these mm-hmm. friends, we got along very well together. And of course, I played basketball. They talk about Willie having that shot from the corner. My shot was pretty good in the corner too. I got along with the teachers and the friends. I just had a nice time, good time. There was no one incident. I do the thing that I remember most was that I graduated in 1961, so in the summer of 1960, NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, sent students who they considered had promise on various institutes, and I went to North Carolina Central. It was North Carolina College at the time.
Mm-hmm.
There I met Otto White, who was one of the pioneers here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I met Dorita Cogdale, who went to school with my wife at UNCG. And I met all the people and had a nice time. We spent 6 weeks there, and mm-hmm. we took chemistry and biology and physics and math, and we had a good time. Had a good time. I learned a little bit about college life there,
mm-hmm.
So it prepared me more for Carolina than anything else.
What made you decide to go to college?
Well, in my family, it was never. It was never an issue. We just assumed everyone was going to college. I mean, there was never any discussion about if you were going to college. The discussion was, where are you going? I mean, it was just assumed that once you finished high school, you went to college. I mean, it was just never, wasn't an issue. Just something you just naturally did. It's like, getting in the morning and eating breakfast. When you graduated, you went off to college, period.
Mm-hmm. Why'd you choose UNC?
Money. I only applied to 5 schools when I was a senior.
Mm-hmm.
I applied to Wake Forest, Duke, Carolina, Howard, and Fisk. Wake Forest wrote me back and said they weren't integrated. Big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Dukes wrote me back and said they were only integrated at their undergraduate level. Their graduate level. Fisk wanted me to write a 10-page autobiography of my life, and I told them I ain't lived that long.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't gonna write that. So it was down to Howard and Carolina. Howard accepted me, and Carolina accepted me. Howard was more expensive than Carolina. Plus, I preferred a smaller town than a larger town. But Carolina wrote me back and said, we accept you, but because of your low SAT scores, and I had something like 1,400, 1,500, it was pretty high. But anyway, they said, you probably would not have success at Carolina. Mm. Nobody tells me what I can't do. Mm-hmm. Not only did I have success at Carolina, but I went on, got everything else out the way. And back then, including room and board, not food, but room and board, mm-hmm. the whole intuition, the whole fee for the whole year was $1,300. And that was much cheaper than Howard and anything else, but that was it. So it was my, and it wasn't because I didn't realize what I got myself into until my parents put me out. What's the big auditorium there on the main campus?
Is it Keenan?
I forgot what our auditorium. It's where they had the freshman orientation. 2,000 of us went there. Mm-hmm. And I looked around and I said, oh my God, all these white people. What have I done? But it was no big deal. You know, That's why I chose Carolina. It wasn't, at that time, the idea that I was, say, breaking ground or being a pioneer hadn't really entered my mind. I was just something that I thought that you did. Mm-hmm. But the newspaper in Thomasville had a big headline. Thomasville Negro goes to UNC. I said, really? But it was immediately, there were only 5 people in my freshman class. And the 5 people you saw in the program, those were they. Yeah. 5 people out of 2,000. Yeah. And no women. Mm-hmm. In fact, Karen Parker transferred after her sophomore year at UNCG. And she was, like I said, the first woman that Carolina. Women couldn't go to, during my time, women couldn't go to Carolina unless they were from Chapel Hill or they majored in an allied health science. And that was the only reason. Everybody else had to go to the Women's College of the University of North Carolina. That's where Ponsetta went. Because you couldn't go to UNC. Mm-hmm.
What were some of the experiences being one of the few black people on campus?
Well, you know, Dr. Hoover and I were talking about that today, and we didn't have any real negative experiences. I had 2 experiences that I can recall. One was in French. I took French, the third course of French, and I scored on one test something like a 70-something. I don't know what it was. And the teacher looked at me and said, oh, for you, this is okay. And that sort of upset me, and I said, no one, what do you mean for you it's okay? So the next test, I remember I got 90-something because I really studied. But that wasn't my major, and I didn't want to study French that hard. Mm-hmm. So the next test I just wanted to show him that I could ace his course if I really put my mind to it, you know. And the whole time he lectured, I was the only black person in his class, as I was in most of my classes. But the whole time he lectured, he looked right straight at me. I just remember him.
How many people were in the class?
Oh, about 30.
Okay.
Yeah. And he looked at me the whole time. And so I just wanted to show him that, yeah, I can do anything I want to do. And the second thing that happened to me was that I took Russian history. I know I had an A in the course. Mm-hmm. But I got a B. And I tried to find the professor. To this day, 50 years later, I can't find him. I don't know where he is. Mm. I hope that's so be his dead. No, sorry. I can't say that.
Oh, my God.
But, I mean, you know, he can't do that. I mean, I think he really was racist. I really do. Because I know I had an ego in the family, and I don't. And I served my finals, so I know that it wasn't. In philosophy, I got a D. I deserved that. Well, I didn't deserve a D, but the philosophy instructor wanted us to think like he did. Mm-hmm. And I would tell him, no one tells me what I think. And I told him, I think like I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, so, but he wanted us to think. And so the whole time I was in the philosophy course, he never thought I could measure up to his standards. And to this day, if I had to do it over again, I'd do the same thing. I would never measure to his standards, because I thought his standards sucked. You know, be very frank with you. But those are the only two incidents that I really, really were negative. Most of the incidents I had were, say, neutral or positive. I can't think of anything that...
So you didn't have any negative run-ins with other students?
No. In fact, the only thing I had expected that the people, the white students that I would have close relationships with, mm-hmm. be from the North. Totally different. The white students I had close relationships with, from the South. I forgot Charlie's name, from Charlotte, and another guy, Jim Seymour, from Decatur, Georgia. Became very good friends. Mm-hmm. And the people from the North, like New York, and mm-hmm. ignored us.
Why do you think that was?
You know, I don't know. I really think the reason is that in the South, even now, even though there was segregation, people still talked. I knew everybody, in my hometown, even though it was segregated, mm-hmm. we knew everybody. Mm-hmm. And no one talked. No one knew anybody, you know? So I think that was part of the reason, you know? I really do. Even now, I prefer going to North Carolina and South Carolina and talking to people than going to places like New York and Connecticut, you know, up mm-hmm. north here. We have friendly relationships. In fact, the former mayor of Wilmington used to come out when we would go down to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. We used to come out to the house and sit down and talk with us all the time, you know. So I think that was the reason. People in the South just talk to each other, you know. Mm-hmm. We know each other. Like we're going to move to North Carolina, like Winnebago, which is outside Wilmington. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows everybody, you know. They know everybody in town, you know. And they're friendly. Yeah. A lot friendlier.
What was your major in undergrad?
Zoology.
Zoology?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, I majored in zoology. Larry Poe majored in zoology. In fact, Larry Poe and I took invertebrate zoology together and genetics together. Mm-hmm. Dr. Hoover majored in chemistry, and we took physical chemistry together. And we taught him a lesson. We tried to blow up the lab. To this day, I don't know what happened. We were doing something with a mixture of benzene and something else and using the Bunsen burner. All of a sudden, boom, that was fire everywhere. We don't know. To this day, 50 years later, mm-hmm. I don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. I couldn't explain it. But that was fire everywhere. Yeah.
What were some of the things that you were involved in campus?
Well, I guess in terms of activities, I guess intramural athletics was a big part because we did basketball all the time. In student government, I guess the Academic Affairs Committee was the only thing that I did while I was on campus. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Just mostly basketball and intramural sports and then Academic Affairs Committee for Student Government. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was about it. That's all I had time for, you know, because most of the time you just spent studying. In fact, what was the name of the, I forgot the name of the main library on campus.
Davis? Or is it Wilson?
Wilson, right beside the new undergraduate library. That's yeah. Wilson. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the Pine Room is not there. That was the snack bar, the canteen or snack bar was called the Pine Room at that time. Is it still? No. It was in the basement of the No Hall. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would leave the Wilson Library and go to the Pine Room about 11, 12 o'clock at night to get my usual midnight snack of four hot dogs and a quart of milk. Mm-hmm. Before I went to the dormitory, yeah. But that's all he had time for, because, you know, most of the time I spent, at night studying. I studied, you know, like at least 4 or 5 hours a night, mm-hmm. just to make it. You had to, just couldn't make it otherwise. That's why I met my wife, because of my eating habits.
Your wife is also a UNC?
Yeah, she went to Women's College.
Okay.
UNCG, yeah. But I met her when she came to the UNC for summer school and used to pass in front of my dormitory, you know, throw rocks at my window. She claims she doesn't do it, but I know she does. That's where I met remember Willie Cooper. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that summer, Larry Poe and I and Willie Cooper, we were in front of the dormitory. I don't know the name, I forgot the name of it, but it was a dormitory right beside the old football stadium, right down from the old baseball stadium, right down from the No Hall. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we actively tried to get Willie to go into basketball, but like Willie said, it's, you know, unless you make the first team, you aren't gonna, no use even your chance of making pros are slim, especially with Dean Smith's basketball team, and he was there the whole time I was there. In fact, he was a member of the church that Otto and I joined when we got to Chapel Hill. Binkley Memorial Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. We both joined that our freshman year. Because they used to have services in what we called it Y Court, Girard Hall. And then they built the church out. Yeah, but we were first. In fact, we were probably the first two African-American members of the Southern Baptist Convention, mm-hmm. in which the Southern Baptist Convention pitched a hissy fit to have these two African-Americans join them. Of course, they kicked Binkley out of the Southern Baptist Convention, but they were in the American Baptist Convention, so it didn't make a difference.
Could you go more into the opposition you had being one of the first members of the Southern Baptist Convention?
Well, you never really felt it because by Binkley being a part of the American Baptist Convention, we just never felt any need to participate in anything with the Southern Baptist Convention. Otto and I and four other students from the Baptist Student Union, all of us drove to Green Lake, Wisconsin to American Baptist through the convention, and you know, it was nice. And so and then when I moved to Washington, and the church I belonged to were part of the Progressive National Baptist Convention, I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I never felt it. But not being a part of a Southern Baptist Convention never affected my life one way or the other. In fact, I wouldn't have joined it anyway. Now the church I belong to is a part of the Southern Baptist Convention, but the head of the Southern Baptist Convention is an African American, mm-hmm. and they're trying. But, you know, still in the back of my mind, I still feel that they aren't really on board yet, you know, mm-hmm. you know.
What did you go into with your zoology degree?
With my zoology degree?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. At first, I wanted to go to med school.
Mm-hmm.
But then I worked in a hospital laboratory in Greensboro.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out I hated to mess with patients. And I figured a doctor shouldn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to graduate school and got my master's and PhD from Howard University. And then for the next 30 years, I taught biology in colleges around the country, I mean in the area. My first job was at American University in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Cheney University, and then I went to Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And I was there for 23 years. But the thing I liked about IUP, we call it IUP, is that we taught human anatomy. And I taught human anatomy to nurses,
mm-hmm.
and anatomy and physiology to nurses and safety science people. But the thing I liked about it is that the other person who taught human anatomy and nurses also got his PhD from Howard.
Mm-hmm.
So Howard University controlled the human anatomy department for nurses
mm-hmm.
at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And my goodness, we started out with teaching 60 students per semester each. And we ended up teaching 120 students in 4 courses because the School of Nursing just expanded big time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they started offering first a recertification program, and then they started offering a PhD program in nursing, and it just shut off. And so pretty soon all of my time just went into teaching human anatomy for nursing. I mean, didn't have time to do anything else. You know, and it was cadaver-based, so we always went to the University of Pittsburgh and got our cadavers and brought them back to IUP, and there we were. Of course, a lot of people, known students, just sat there and looked at the cadaver and didn't do anything. But that was okay. We enjoyed it. Yep.
You said you found out you didn't like working with patients face-to-face. What made you want to go to med school before then?
Most because my parents assumed I would go to med school. I mean, it was not something that I initially decided. It was something that it was assumed I would do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. And when I actually got in the position to make that decision, I found out I didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's not what I wanted to do. I love to just stay in the lab and mess around, and that's what I did. I would go on the floor sometime. It wasn't my thing. It wasn't my thing. I enjoyed sitting in the lab and just fiddling around with machines and getting machines ready for work and everything. You know, I enjoyed that.
Okay. Your master's is in public health?
Everything's in zoology.
In zoology?
Yeah. A bachelor's in zoology, a master's in zoology, and a PhD is in zoology. Mm-hmm. I've taken one botany course in my life. And that was one botany course too many.
So how do you think your experiences before UNC shaped how you are right now? Did you have any teachers that were like prominent in your development?
Well, I think that what has happened by my parents being in the same school I went. Mm-hmm. Dad was a principal, Mom was a librarian. I developed an aptitude for getting along with people. Mm-hmm. And when I hit high school, the teachers knew that anything they did would never get back to Daddy. I would never. Because I would go out to drink beer, teach and stuff like that. But never got back to him. I would never tell him anything. And they knew this. And so, and the students knew that. And I guess that was a survival technique. But I learned how to get along with people because I was a class president for my freshman class in high school and my junior class in high school. Mm-hmm. I was vice president for the sophomore class. The senior class, I wasn't anything because me and my girlfriend started a boycott of the cafeteria. The cafeteria was on our campus, but it was not a part of my father's administration. Mm-hmm. But Daddy said, the community thought it was, so he said, son, stop the boycott. Mm-hmm. So I convinced my girlfriend at the time that we had to stop it. And so I wasn't elected. I ran for dog catcher. Nothing. The cafeteria is still standing, too. But that was it. I think that's the value of my upbringing. Learn how to get along with people, mm-hmm. And serve me well.
Would you think that holds true for UNC having the place in your development?
Well, when I look back, UNC, I had a, as far as I'm concerned, I learned a lot of UNC because with my zoology major and we had third when I was a chemistry and English and everything, I learned a lot. But the thing about being in such an abject minority, because mm-hmm. when I came, there were less than 30 African Americans on campus. And when I graduated, there may have been more. But the prejudice is sometimes it's subtle. And while I had the knowledge, I didn't have the confidence.
What do you mean?
I didn't feel that I could. I had the knowledge, but I didn't feel like I could do anything with it, Mm-hmm. After I finished Howard, mm-hmm. I felt there was nothing I couldn't do. All my classes at American University were 100% white. My classes at Cheney were mostly black, but my classes at IUP were about 99% white. And the fact that IUP there were only 10% of us were, out of 700 faculty, only about 70 were African Americans. And in that environment, I think Carolina prepared me for that environment and how it gave me the confidence to do it. I mean, I figured it wasn't anything I couldn't do, and I did, well, I did it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I felt that was nothing I couldn't do, because I was elected by them at IUP to the University Senate. I was elected to the Undergraduate Curriculum Committee. I was elected to the University-wide Tenure Committee. Mm-hmm. I was elected to the Sabbatical Leave Committee. So all these were elected positions that had to be elected by the faculty. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew me on campus. Of course, I sort of get around. And the greatest thing was I played racquetball, and I would go to the rec at about 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I played against the president, the vice president, the provost, all the big people on campus were there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, everybody on campus, I enjoyed it. The provost always served us. She would have us over for meetings and dinner, and she always served us salmon. I don't like salmon, but I enjoyed the IUP. I enjoyed it. I would do it again if you could cut out the meetings and all that. Fine. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Carolina. I mean, it was what it was. As we were talking today. When we were so low in numbers, we were no threat to anybody. The turmoil started when our numbers increased and we became a threat. I mean, when y'all have only five or six black people on campus, you're no threat. But when we got to 200 and walked around in groups, we became a threat, you know.
What kind of turmoil, like, occurred?
Well, you know, the big thing on campus was getting an increase in pay for the cafeteria workers. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, that was huge. We were talking about that today, but the people that were, see, I graduated in 65, but that started like 67, 68 in that time. So that's when we started, got some turmoil, and the black student movement started and all that in 67, 68. Mm-hmm. And that's when numbers of African American students started increasing, and the whole atmosphere sort of changed. That was 68, and I remember the atmosphere changed in D.C. too, because that's the way I was in D.C. It just, because that was the time of the Freedom Bus Rides in the South, and Stokely Carmichael's Southern Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and the Congress of Racial Equality and the Black Panther Movement and all that. That was all in the late 60s, early 70s. So, yeah, those really were turbulent times. Right after the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Act was passed, those were turbulent times, yeah.
Did y'all have demonstrations on campus?
Not at Carolina, at Howard, yeah. They burned down our ROTC building. Mm. Burned them down. That was in 68, 69, yeah. Oh, yes. That was, like I said, in fact, I was coming out, I was leaving a seminar at the Smithsonian to go see Poinsettia down in Wilmington. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get back to D.C. because they had installed curfews. And anything that would get me back, with any bus that will get me back to D.C. without the doing non-curfew hours, will leave during the curfew there. So I was stuck down in Whiteville for 2-3 weeks. Of course, I didn't mind it, but I was stuck down there. I made the best of it. Made the best of it.
So you mentioned that UNC gave you the knowledge and Howard gave you the confidence.
Yeah.
How did you think that Howard gave you the confidence where UNC couldn't?
Well, at UNC during that time, the professors gave you the knowledge, but not the encouragement, you know?
Okay.
Where at Howard, the instructors gave you knowledge, but they gave you the encouragement. They really backed you. You can mm-hmm. do anything you want to. And yeah, that was why. I know of you had a great support system. Mm-hmm. You know, that was it. It was greater than there was no support. Well, the support system at Carolina during that time when I entered mm-hmm. was mainly through other undergraduates and graduates. We supported each other.
Mm-hmm.
The support system didn't come from the faculty.
Okay.
You know, it didn't come from the faculty. In fact, I'm not sure how much support you get now from the faculty. What I see now is that integration has just destroyed the mentoring and advisory system for many of our African American students. You know, even in high school, even mm-hmm. though we didn't have the equipment and the money and everything that the white school had, you had a support system. Teachers really supported you and gave you encouragement. And I'm not sure that happens now. In fact, I know it doesn't happen. In fact, at IUP, we had to start our own mentoring program and really make it work, because a lot of students, African American students, if you got A's and B's, they accuse you of trying to act white.
Hmm.
And so we started a mentoring program, and so we partnered with many school systems around the state,
mm-hmm.
and to really mentor these students. In fact, we would bring students in for simulated college programs in the summertime, and give them coursework and also strategies for success in college, and to help. To help them get through. In fact, my daughter went to IUP, and I went up to the dean in the College of Natural Science
mm-hmm.
and told him, I said, I know it's illegal for me to be involved in my daughter's education, but I'm an advisor. Even though it won't be official, but I will be her advisor. I will watch her all the way. And to this day, she doesn't know that I know every grade she ever got, everything. And it worked out. I'm glad I did that, because her advisor in psychology screwed up. And she would not have graduated on time.
How did they, what, scheduling?
They didn't give her credit for a course she had taken. So I went up to the dean's office, and she was in the College of Natural Science, the dean's office, and we sat and went over a transcript. We sat down and went over a transcript, course by course by course. And I told her she took the course, because I know she took the course. It was anatomy and physiology. And I know she took it. So, like I said, but the thing that really, and points and I discuss it, how many other students fall through the cracks because their parents or teachers aren't aware of all these things,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's what has happened, is that, and a lot of these professors who are not from minority areas, minority backgrounds, really don't care. They don't, you know, it's, I guess, the sign of the times. You sort of have to be your, like Paul Sutter wouldn't have graduated, she hadn't read her own her advisor almost screwed her up.
Mm.
You know, you really have to be your own advocate these days. I mean, you can't You'd have to read everything and sort of work out everything. You have to know what you're doing, mm-hmm. because people will screw you off. I mean, they will do it, you know, especially in some of the, even at Carolina today, I bet you there are professors on campus that will, I mean, I'm sure that's sort of cynical, but they screw you, you know. I just know it. I don't think they're different than anybody at Penn State or, I did my postdoc up at Woods Hole at the Marine Biological Laboratory. Yeah, they're people, they don't care, you know. All they want to do is write the grants, get the money, and publish papers, and students go to hell, you know. So you really have to be your own advocate. That's somewhat cynical, but that's the way it is.
And you think, do you think that that's general for PWIs in relation to HBCUs?
I think that's an attitude you're going to find in large research-oriented universities.
Okay.
Like Duke, Carolina State, Harvard, Yale, I mean, Stanford, Chicago, these large research-oriented universities. I mean, they own the forefront of all the research, but for a student to go there, you really have to know what you're doing. You really have to sort of be your own advocate. The smaller schools, the teachers take more of an interest in the students, but the problem with the smaller schools is the teachers are making the money. See, that's the problem you're having. You know, we've had teachers apply, professors apply to IUP. We had one guy apply from, some small school, Francis Marion University in Florida, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
He was teaching 4 courses, and he was making something like $40,000 a year. And this was about like 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's no money. And then he wanted us, for us, we only taught 2 courses.
Mm-hmm.
And the average starting salary for an assistant professor is about $70,000. So I mean, that's what you're up against. So we tell students now, know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be your own advisor. You have to be your own advocate, you know. And that's true. I mean, I've seen it so many times. I just that's what has to happen. I mean, there were students in my class, and that was one guy in my class. I remember he played football, and the coach said, forgot his name. Coach, tell me, how can you understand him? He stutters all the time. Guy never stuttered in my class. In fact, the kids loved him. He led all the, we had a lot of field trips and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He led those, did fine. I see him in the grocery stores now. He's a wonderful person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that no one took the interest in him, and he just didn't. That affected him, you know. Yeah.
Well, I've already answered all my questions have been answered.
Okay.
But do you have anything else you would like to say?
No, I think I've said everything. I think the mistake that a lot of African American students
mm-hmm.
make, falling through the cracks, is that, like I said, they don't become their own advocate. You have to know what you really have to know what you're doing. Read the bulletin, know what it takes to graduate, know how many hours you need. Like, for example, in Poinsettia, she needed the last 30 hours of, the regulation was, the last 30 hours of coursework had to be taken at UNCG. Well, she couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if she had not gotten a waiver for that by going to the administration, she wouldn't have graduated.
Mm-hmm.
Because she came to Carolina her last semester there. I know, just to be with me. Of course, she'll deny that. And you can stay as long as you want to, because I probably don't want to stay in this room today. But that's it. Okay. You have to be your own advocate. I mean, I would remember when I was here, there was one history professor. His nickname was Blackjack McCloud. I don't know what his real name was. But our advisor, and we were told that if you ever got in this class, drop it. Mm-hmm. Because African Americans couldn't get anything over a D. And we were told this. And one of the people that entered the university with me didn't believe it. He said, "You can't give me a D. You got a D." You know. So, you know, these things you have to know. You know, talk to other students. The best advisors, I learned this doing registration. My daughter, who went to IUP, said, "Daddy, do you know where the advice for registration is?" I said, "No." "On the bathroom walls." Students had written on the bathroom walls what courses to take, what professors to board, and all that. I said, "Really?" You know, and that's a lot of times your fellow classmates are your best advisors. Mm-hmm. And other students always, you know, just talk to other students. "So what do you think about this teacher?" And they're going to be honest. I understand their websites are now rated, but I've looked at them, but I would ask other students, you know, just who go there. They've taken the same courses that you could take. "What do you think about this one?" You know, you aren't trying to necessarily find the easiest course. Sometimes you are, but you're trying to find those professors that are very fair. Mm-hmm. And what I found is that I don't care how hard your course is, if you're fair in your treatment of people, no problem. But if you aren't fair, that's when the trouble starts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That was it?
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Honey, we're going to have to learn how to work one of these smartphones.